Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Melio. Melio offers blood tests before, during, and after pregnancy, from non-invasive prenatal tests to general health checks, helping you and your family take control of their health. All Melio tests are conducted by trained professionals at locations throughout the UK, with the results sent directly to your phone or laptop. Plus, every test comes with a personal health report from a Melio doctor. Melio. The more you know about your health, the more you can do about it, and the best source of knowledge is your blood. To find out more or to find a location near you, visit meliohealth.co.uk/health-pregnancy. There'll be a link in the show notes. We've also recorded a bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast with Melio doctor Donna Fullerton, where we take a closer look at non-invasive prenatal testing. Check out that bonus episode in season 4 of the Finally Pregnant podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello there. How are you doing? The sun is shining today, which is wonderful after a few days of rain, but I am feeling a little bit tired. I went out last night. I say I went out. I went to the theatre to see Phantom of the Opera. One of my sisters took me as an early birthday present. I have never seen it before. And at the end of the first half, I thought it was good, you know. But by the end of it, honestly, that last scene, I was crying. And then when everyone was clapping and like there was a standing ovation. And you know what? Outside of the fact that the show was good, just being there surrounded by other people was a pretty big milestone. And along with lots of other things I've been up to recently, whether it's days out with Ren and other family, going swimming myself, and now the theatre, it really feels like we're in a new era. Do you know what I mean? There's just so much transition and change, and lots of it's positive, but there's lots of other feelings around it too. It was a topic actually that came up in a recent Finally Parenting group that I run as part of the Hangout. Not only, you know, are we feeling the change in season and everything else that I've just mentioned, but so many of those in the group are feeling the impact of coming out of lockdown as a mum for the first time, you know, because they went in either with like teeny tiny little ones, even with Ren, who was 9 months old when we went in. It feels so different coming out and doing stuff with her now that she's a toddler. And for others who went into lockdown, either not pregnant at all yet or pregnant and then had their little ones during lockdown, coming out just feels so, so different, doesn't it? It's actually like amazing, but it's a bit mind-blowing as well because things just feel so different. And it's good to have that group to share that and for that to, you know, kind of resonate around the group that everyone's feeling a bit like that. It was really positive, actually. And it means that we can all support each other and understand when we post during the month, you know, like having not necessarily issues, but just feelings around it and kind of getting our heads around it all. But yeah, it's a funny old time for us as parents as well. And a lot of people are, well, in the parenting group specifically, there's a number of people who are going through other transitions, such as returning to work. And we're going to have a session specifically on that on Tuesday, the 26th of October. Now, we did this a while ago. We had one on secondary infertility, and it was just a really nice space to talk specifically about one topic. And the request has come in that we could do this around going back to work. And I'm more than happy to facilitate that. And always, you know, really open to hearing people's ideas and suggestions and working out how we can fit that in so that we can offer the support that is needed by you guys. And so often, like, I kind of am mirroring that, or I've just been through it. And yeah, I just want to make sure that that support is there for you. So if you are interested in any of those topics, really, or just kind of connecting with other people who are finally pregnant and parenting, head over to catstrawbridge.com. And as always, there is a link in the show notes. The topic of maternity leave and returning to work actually came up in today's chat with Nicola Ludlam-Rain, aka Mummy Nutrition on Instagram. Nick has a little boy who is almost three, and she is currently pregnant following two recent miscarriages. She kindly spoke to me not only about her own experiences of being pregnant after loss, but also a little bit about nutrition when you're pregnant and lots more as well. So I really hope that you enjoy our conversation. Before I go, I wanted to remind you that there is still time to join any of my pregnancy or postnatal. Yes, the postnatal has launched. I don't know if you know that already, but the first one will be in October. So we've got postnatal yoga, and then we've got pregnancy yoga and Pilates courses. And in October, when you sign up, you will not only obviously be supporting yourself and your pregnancy or your postnatal body and self, but you will also be supporting Tommy's, the incredible charity, and all the work they do for Baby Loss Awareness Week and all year long, let's face it, because I'm going to be donating 10% of all of the profits for all of the courses to their work, which I'm really excited about. I also want to remind you that as this series of the Finally Pregnant podcast is coming to an end soon, there is a whole back catalogue of people's stories you can listen to, like literally 60 episodes. And there are also exclusive episodes of the podcast available to Hangout members, which is another reason to join. These are episodes with experts in their field offering you lots of advice and information around things like feeding, first aid, relationships, and loads more. If you join now, you can be there live for the next recording, which is with midwife Marley, who will be talking about the recent changes and new guidelines around induction for women and birthing people. Now, that is something that has come up a few times actually in the Hangout about inductions and wanting to hear positive stories and just wanting to understand them a bit. So it's going to be a really, really important conversation. And it's happening on Tuesday, the 5th of October. So if you want to be part of that and you can ask her questions live, then make sure you head over to catstrawbridge.com and find out and join the Hangout. You will be so, so welcome. Lastly, can I ask that you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen so that it reaches as many people as possible who need to hear stories like Nicola's and all of those other people that I have mentioned? Because I want people to know that they are not alone, and you can help me do that. That would be so, so special. And that's it from me for now. I will be back. Don't worry, this series isn't over just yet. But I hope that you enjoy this episode and my chat with Nick, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye. In addition to this podcast, you'll find lots of other support for the wonderful Finally community over on my Instagram at Trying Years and at catstrawbridge.com. Examples of that support include the Finally Pregnant yoga and Pilates courses and a wonderful community called The Hangout. When you join The Hangout, which you can do whether you are pregnant or parenting, you'll receive a free meditation, access to 24/7 support, invitations to monthly speaker sessions and support groups, discounts, and lots more. Find out more about all of the support available to you at catstrawbridge.com. There's a link in the show notes. Hi there, Nick. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you. It's glorious weather outside, and thank you very much for inviting me on.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, you're right. We're having a little late summer siesta, aren't we? Which is very nice. I don't know if siesta is the right word, but you know what I mean. So I've kept you inside for this. Apologies, because I know you're going out in a minute to run some errands. But thank you so much, because it's so important that we hear people's stories, whether that is because they have experienced infertility or loss, and in your experience it is that you have experienced that loss. But the good news is, the wonderful news is, that you are now pregnant. So it would be amazing to hear a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So my name's Nicola and I'm a registered dietitian. So I work for both the NHS, private hospital, I do freelance work, and I've done that for over a decade now. I have got a little boy and he is nearly 3 years old, and conceiving him was, I would say, like a piece of cake. Like, second month of trying, I documented my pregnancy on a private Instagram page every single week from 5-6 weeks, and then I made it public at week 12. So when we decided to try for baby two, I've always wanted two children. I've got a bleeding condition, so I'd never wanted more than two children, just two for me. And we started trying last year in 2020, and we had our first miscarriage. And what happened was, around 7 weeks pregnant, I didn't feel pregnant, and I kept saying this, but I thought, you know what, it's probably just one of those things. With my first, I didn't really feel pregnant around 9 weeks, but this was 7 weeks. So we went along to a scan, a reassurance scan, in inverted commas, fully expecting to be reassured. And she said, "Have you got your dates wrong?" And I think it's a lovely way to be told, almost, because I think if you're trying for a baby, you do not have your dates wrong. However, there was a little glimmer of hope in the back of my mind, thinking, well, I might have done. However, 2 days later, I then started bleeding. For me, though, I think the scan helped to prepare me for what was likely to come. I did not expect a miscarriage, even though I know that one in four pregnancies miscarry, because I didn't experience it with my first and I flew through it, didn't expect it. So I actually waited a few months, and that was because my sister was getting married abroad this year, since being cancelled. So I delayed trying a few more months, and we fell pregnant again in the second month of trying. And I was like, yes. However, we booked a private scan for 7 weeks and we miscarried just before it. At this point, I was getting worried, because I was thinking, well, the secondary infertility, I know unfortunate friends who are still going through this now. This time round, though, I didn't wait for a period to come. I got a negative pregnancy test, and lo and behold, we fell pregnant. And oh my God, I feel quite emotional talking about it, but like, this one stuck. It was really difficult at the start. I booked a private scan for 7.5 weeks. And I'm not joking, like, I can feel the emotion now going to that scan and being told that there was like a 3-centimeter baby. And so, like, I'm on the verge of crying now. I just cried because I never thought, like, I've got friends who've experienced many more miscarriages than me. So it was third time lucky. We booked another scan for 9 weeks. That went well. However, the anxiety never went away. So it was all about the 12-week scan. And then I was thinking, but then the 20-week scan might not go well. So I'm now 31 weeks, and I'm pleased to say that, like, my anxiety levels are at the lowest that they've ever been, but it's taken well over half the entire pregnancy to get to where we are now.
Gosh, I'm so sorry for all that you've been through. I really am. And actually, I know we're not going to focus on the miscarriage, but just something you said there is something that crosses my mind quite a lot, because I guess of the field that I'm in. So I do hear about miscarriage, I guess, more than someone else might do. But we had a scan and were told we were going to miscarry. And then, you know, it happened kind of a few days later. And I see that scan almost as having been a silver lining. You know, I'm so glad that I was prepared, because it was petrifying in that situation. Had I not been prepared, oh my gosh, I would have been so terrified. So I just wanted to kind of recognize that, because it is something that isn't talked about like that, just like, what the hell is going on kind of thing. But I'm so sorry that you have experienced this. The fact that you went headlong into trying again, like, I can only commend you. Like, that's amazing, because I know that when I talk to people and they kind of say, oh, I was scared at the idea of trying again, which I'm sure is a whole mix of emotions, isn't it? But that this little one is stuck is just the most wonderful news. It really, really is. Congratulations. And can you, like, I hear totally what you're talking about, that anxiety and counting the days and counting up to the scans. And, like, you know, we talk about scan anxiety quite a lot over on my account. Can you pinpoint any of the things that helped you with that anxiety and how you kind of managed that at all?
100%. So I think in the early days, it was definitely the private scans, which, so the 7.5 week that added reassurance, then 9.5 weeks. And then I decided that I could make it to 12. And then when I finally got to meet my midwife face to face, I told her how I was feeling and that I was feeling really anxious. And she was so sweet. She offered me weekly appointments with a Doppler to check for the heartbeat, which is unbelievable, might not be available everywhere. However, she made an allowance. I said to her that I could do every two weeks. However, immediately regretted it about 8 days later. So it was definitely that. The other things, I think, were talking to other friends who had gone through it and just knowing that I wasn't alone and that it was possible to have a healthy pregnancy after miscarriage. And I think that's one of the reasons why we decided to try straight away, is that I'd spoken to doctors, and actually there was research that if you tried within a few months after a miscarriage, as long as you had that negative test, actually there might be more hope of it sticking. And then I think for me, the big turning point was when I started to feel movements. And with my first, the placenta was at the front, so I didn't really feel him that much. But with this baby, the placenta is at the back. So now I've got that daily reassurance, and now I don't need the Dopplers. I don't need to see my midwife very often. I am actually having a few scans at the moment for growth scans, but the baby's growing absolutely fine. But again, that's quite nice because it adds reassurance. So I think my advice would be, you don't have to wait for those 12 weeks. You can book a private scan. And I was actually offered one on the NHS with this pregnancy early on, but my husband wasn't allowed to go because of COVID. And so I declined it. And I said, I'd rather pay my £50 to have my husband there, because I knew that if it wasn't good news, like, I wouldn't have been able to hold it together. And I think it was my husband who got me through, like, the first one. I can totally relate to what you were saying about having that scan and being warned or reassured is just helpful either way.
Yeah, it so is, isn't it? And I don't know about you, but I, like, every scan, basically, I got onto the table in tears. I think I probably walked through the door in tears. And for people who have been going through this without having, you know, a partner or a friend or family member with them, like, my heart goes out to you, because it is just, whether it's good or bad news, like, this is such a highly emotive time, and you don't know what you're going to get necessarily when you get, you know, when you walk into the room. And that's just must have been so difficult. And I know that lots of people have gone to private scans because they have been able to bring their partners or a person to that, which has been brilliant. A shame that, like, you know, it's an additional cost because not everyone can afford it, but it's good that I'm so pleased that you have been able to have that reassurance. That's amazing. And you talk about the movements. I always, oh my gosh, like, I could cover my eyes now when people who have been through, like, when anyone, I guess, obviously, but particularly people who have been through a journey to be pregnant, and then they tell me that they have got, it's an anterior placenta, isn't it? And so they can't, oh gosh, I'm just like, why? That's so unfair. So it's brilliant to hear that you can feel the movements and that you do have that regular reassurance. That makes such a difference, doesn't it?
It really does. Like, every morning and every night, I'm just looking and thinking, well, if I have a drink, can I make the baby move? And I think with my first baby, I did actually go to hospital because I thought, oh, have I got reduced movement? But I haven't done that this time. And I really think it's because of the position of the placenta, basically. But I think, like, going back to your question about anxiety as well, like, what helped lower it? For me, I decided to control everything that I could control. So, for example, I completely omitted alcohol. I completely cut out caffeine until I think maybe I was like around 20 weeks pregnant. So I was trying to control my anxieties by thinking, do you know what? I'm doing everything that I can do. I slept on my side from my second trimester. I did work out, but I didn't do intense workouts. Now, the NHS say that you can carry on working out, you know, if you're used to it. However, I just decided for me to lower my anxiety, I would respect my body and do gentle workouts. So that's another way that I helped control it, just thinking, well, I'm doing all I can. It's not my fault. And I think reading about another story from one of the Tony Tuck girls, she experienced a miscarriage. It was my sister who sent me her story. And because I'd read it, I immediately felt not alone. I thought, it's not my body failing. It's an awful thing that happens, but it's just one of these things. So I had that in my mind, but also I had, right, I'm going to control what I can control.
I love that. That is like such a good mantra. It really is. And actually, funny enough, that was one that my dad said to me when we were trying to conceive, you know, like, yeah, control what you control 100%. And we will come back because nutrition is what you do. So it'd be great to hear a bit more about kind of that side of things with your pregnancy. But something else that you mentioned earlier on made me think of kind of the mantra. Now, I'm not going to be able to put this together succinctly, although I should because it's not hard, but give me a minute. and it's about like, every pregnancy is different ultimately, you know, and just because something's happened before, just because something has happened to someone you know, it doesn't mean it's going to happen again, you know, or to you. And that's really, really important, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. And also, I think I'm quite fortunate in that my losses were vet quite early on. And I almost think that maybe things do happen for a reason. And they also think that this baby who's going to be born, our rainbow baby, would have never have been here had it not been for those two losses. So that makes, I'm just very grateful. And I think if you've never experienced loss before, you've got a different view of pregnancy. I almost, like with my first, I just took it for granted. And then it's only now having experienced loss and then another loss, you think, wow, like you can't take it for granted. So yeah, I think I'm in a good place right now, but it's taken me a lot of time to get here. And I couldn't actually talk about my miscarriage for quite a while, but now I definitely can, just because I've got that reassurance that, you know, baby's nice and strong and they're growing okay.
That's amazing. It really is. And the fact that they are strong, I'm going to try and link it here now to the nutrition, is you know, is because you're nourishing your body, as you mentioned. And talk to us, I guess, not necessarily from a professional point of view, because, you know, you don't know who's listening out there. You can't recommend for them individually, but just about you and your nutrition. Did you go through that phase of like needing the yellow food, which I just remember so vividly and loving and also hating all at the same time? Have you been through that?
Yes, 100%. And I'll tell you something funny. So I run clinics, healthy lifestyle clinics for women who are pregnant. And what I say to women changed after I fell pregnant with my first, because unless you've been pregnant, you don't know what that nausea and those cravings feel like. So yes, with both baby one and this baby, I went through several weeks of just craving carbs. From the moment I got up, then I had to eat every single 2 hours. And I did give in to them. So basically my intake of things like pizza, Nutella wraps, crisps, just toast with anything on went up. And then I think after maybe a couple of weeks of almost just indulging in whatever I wanted, I try and claw it back and think, right, okay, I still have to eat little and often. I still want my carbs with every snack and every meal. But what can I do to make them a little bit more nourishing? So, for example, like if I want toast, instead of adding Nutella, I'll stick, you know, avocado and eggs on to make it higher in nutrients and protein. If I really want some crisps, can I have it dipped into some hummus to give me some extra nourishment? So that's my advice always to ladies, that it's fine to have these indulgences, but let's try and get balance. Let's help you to feel satisfied. Actually having food inside you can really help. Kind of like the dry fruits, like things like oat cakes and crackers. So I was never physically sick apart from once when I took all my vitamins on an empty stomach and then drank some green tea and had some chocolate, which, sorry if you're pregnant and feeling a bit sick. that. So when you do take your supplements, which I'm sure we'll be coming on to, just make sure that you read the label. And if it says take on a full stomach, take on a full stomach. not randomly. So learn from my mistakes.
Yes.
So
yeah. That will be a lesson to everyone. Yeah, don't do that, definitely. And what about, before we do talk about supplements, what about food aversions? Have you had any of them? I remember for me, it was mushroom. Just, and I love mushrooms, but just saying the word almost, it just stuck in my throat. I just could not go near them when I was pregnant. How about you?
Yeah, I think for me, it was a texture thing. So in the morning, my staple before I fell pregnant was either a smoothie or porridge. I could not have either until well over 20 weeks pregnant. Literally the thought of it, like, turned my stomach. And it's so annoying because, like, porridge and smoothies are really healthy. So I can have them now, but it is so funny how you just go off things. So for me, yeah, it was definitely a texture thing, but I just got around it by having, you know, for example, like toast with some nut butter and banana and maybe a bit of honey, because I've got quite a sweet tooth. So yeah, there's a will, there's a way, and it doesn't matter if you go off certain foods because there's loads of different other foods out there that provide the same nourishment.
Definitely, absolutely. And so then talk to me, if you would, about the supplement. So I guess especially, you know, there are some supplements that we know that we want to take at the beginning of our pregnancy, folic acid, isn't it, or folate, up until 12 weeks at least. And I guess when we're going through that yellow food phase, it's almost more important at that point to be making sure that we're taking the right supplements. Well, what are we looking for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, of course, like, all ladies should strive for a balanced diet and getting the 5 a day, but especially if they're not, what we know is that the first 1,000 days of life is really important. And the first 1,000 days is from conception to age 2. So what you eat really does matter. I am actually a fan of pregnancy multivitamins, and the reason why they're different to normal multivitamins is that they don't contain the retinol version of vitamin A. So too much of the retinol version of vitamin A can be harmful. And they also, like you said, contain a higher amount of folic acid, so 400 micrograms instead of 200. And also they contain vitamin D, so that 10 micrograms, as well as other micronutrients which you might be missing out on if your diet isn't the healthiest. And what we know is that ideally that folic acid should be started around 3 months before, so before you start trying. And if ladies have got a BMI of over 30, or if they've got diabetes, or if they take anti-epileptic medication, they actually need a much higher dose of 5 milligrams. So definitely speak to your doctor if you fall into that category. I've taken a pregnancy multivitamin and a breastfeeding multivitamin almost like for the last 3 to 4 years, actually. It's not a supplement to a, sorry, it's not a replacement to a healthy, balanced diet. It's just a supplement. So, you know, if you forget to take it on the odd day, that's fine. But keep it somewhere out and just remember that it's an addition to a healthy, balanced diet when you can get back to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a really, really good advice. You mentioned about your sweet tooth. Now, I'm going to ask not personal as in personal, intimate question, but just this affects me. And I suspect it will other people as well. You mentioned that you've got a sweet tooth. Now, I didn't have a sweet tooth until I got pregnant with Ren, and then it went wild. And I don't think it's left me. Is that? And I know, like, I am more than 2 years postpartum. So in theory, my hormones, like all the other stuff's going on in my world at the moment, so my hormones are all over the shop. But in theory, I believe that my hormones and my emotions have all settled. But I do know that that can take kind of 18 months or longer. What about food-wise and cravings and nutrition and that kind of thing? Am I blaming having a baby on having a sweet tooth? or have I just now got a sweet tooth forever?
I mean, I can totally relate to that. So my first baby is allergic to cow's milk, cow's milk protein allergy. And so I had to cut out dairy for about 18 months and soya. Now, believe it or not, I can't drink milk. It tastes off to me. So I can really relate in that. I'm quite sad that when I go around to people's houses, literally can't drink tea or coffee unless it's herbal because it tastes disgusting to me. I can eat cheese and ice cream.
Phew.
But yeah, I think with regarding cravings, I mean, I always talk about the 80-20 rule in that no diet has to be perfectly healthy 100% of the time. You know, all foods provide us with nourishment, whether it's physically or soul food. And actually sometimes when we actively cut out foods, we end up craving them more, and that's where you can get into like a binge restrict cycle, which isn't a healthy relationship with food. So yeah, I do honor my sweet tooth. You know, I'll allow myself, you know, a handful of, you know, chocolates or whatever I want, like every single day. But it's only a small part of my day. And because I allow it, it allows me to move on, and it's not shouting at me from the cupboards. And if I want to eat three Kit Kats after my dinner, I will, but I might not do that every night of the week. I've almost like got it out of my system. So I think I'm quite a fan of trying to make your meals and snacks as healthy as they can. And then when indulgences come along, it doesn't matter if you just go for it. And in addition to that, obviously trying to keep active, and it might just be going for a walk. You know, you don't have to be doing workouts, or you never have to work off something. It's just doing everything as a part of a healthy, balanced diet and lifestyle.
Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that. Although I'm now definitely going to call sugar my soul food. Oops. No. But and talking about exercise, and if it's a walk, if it's more than that, and I know that you've been keeping up with your exercise throughout your pregnancy. A fertility nurse said to me, so my baby, or 2-year-old now, is an IVF baby, for those who may not know that. But a fertility nurse said to me when I was pregnant that that it's called labour because it's hard work, you know. And so that's why it is important to stay as fit and healthy as you can. Now, I did a lot of that with walking. I did miles and miles and miles of walking. I was too scared because of our situation. And I have been a like heavy gym goer in the past, but I was too scared to go to the gym. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I wish I could have, actually. And when I finally signed up to pregnancy yoga, I was so pleased that I did. And I do think that it is about the movement, but it is also, actually, coming back to that word, it is about the soul as well, and just like the connection and everything. So it's just a wonderful thing to do. But talk to me about your exercising. Like, how has that felt? You mentioned right earlier on that, you know, you have felt comfortable doing it, I guess, because you've been managing it well. But talk to us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so on the day that I experienced my second loss, I actually did some burpees. Now, the two are not linked at all. However, they were heavily linked in my mind. So I decided after that, when we're going to try again, do you know what? I'm just going to be really respectful to my body, and I'm going to move my body, but I'm not going to almost like, you know, like punish it, and that I'm not going to do anything too high intensity that's going to leave me, you know, like thinking, whoa, you know, I'm so drained after that workout. What I did do though is I kept walking, like I said, and I did pregnancy specific workouts. So you can go on YouTube, you can type that in. And then what I wanted to do was I wanted to help educate other ladies in how to work out safely. And so on my Instagram page, Mummy Nutrition, I've got a series of lives with different healthcare professionals doing different workouts of half an hour long that are suitable for trimesters 1, 2, 3. We've got Pilates in there, because like you said, it's all about keeping like strong and supple. I have had a blip. I think the last 6 weeks, Henry wasn't sleeping very well, my toddler, and it threw us off, threw off the routine. And I just think you have to be kind to yourself in times of when you're just feeling very, very tired. So I kept up my walks, and today was actually, this morning, I did a trimester 3 workout with my friend. It's on my Instagram TV. And it's just reminded me that I need to get back to it, because all of a sudden things that didn't feel very hard before are feeling hard. So you're quite right. I want to be in the best place physically and psychologically for this birth. Like, I'm reading a hypnobirthing book as well. So I'm trying to do all I can. And I think pregnancy yoga and Pilates are brilliant, especially the yoga for the psychological benefits and ability to relax and calm down. And that links a lot with hypnobirthing. So I feel like I've got 9 weeks, although my friend today was like, oh, so 6 weeks until term. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, 37 weeks is term. I was like, Hannah, I'm working until 38 weeks. This baby can't come before that.
Oh, they do what they want, don't they? But hopefully. And how are you feeling about being off work, I guess? And obviously the birth, like, how are you feeling about all of that?
Yeah, so the birth, I think the first time when you give birth, well, for me at least, it was very overwhelming. My waters were broken at 4 centimetres. And I've since found out that I think when you have an intervention, it can escalate the intensity. So I absolutely caned the gas and air, which I think in hindsight made me a little bit out of it. So I wasn't able to do my hypnobirthing. I did it up until that point. So this time around, I am determined to give hypnobirthing a better shot. I bought like a headband with headphones in it so I can completely zone out. And I've completely forgotten the second question of what I was going to come on to then.
So it was about the birth and also about finishing work.
Oh yeah, finishing work. Yeah, so I'm quite lucky in that I work across a few different like platforms or freelance social media, and then for the NHS and private hospital. I will be taking another 14 months off the NHS just because I will be working in other areas and just because I can, I think, and it's my last baby. But privately, I will go back after about 2 months and then freelance. Well, I think I took about a week or two off last time. So yeah, I really enjoy working. I will be working throughout my maternity leave, but just not the 9 to 5, as in I don't have to turn up anywhere. It'll be from home, hopefully during nap time. And this is awful, but baby 2 has already been signed up to nursery at 10 months old because that's what the waiting lists are like. Henry loves it. He goes 4 days. So yeah, baby 2 will be doing 2 days because that's the minimum, which I feel a bit heartbroken about because Henry didn't do 3 days until he was 14 months old. So at 10 months old, that's when I'll be getting properly back into my work and then ramping it up from there. So yeah, I feel quite positive in that. The work keeps me sane and it's a big part of who I am, actually.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I remember because Ren went to nursery at 7 months, actually. She did 12 hours and I had a huge amount of guilt around that. God, we tried for her for 7 years and then at 7 months. And actually kind of layered with that is none of my nieces and nephews have been to nursery. They've all been looked after by my mum, but we live a little bit further out than them. So that wasn't possible. Sorry, where I started this was my sister saying to me, you know, it's okay, you're allowed to enjoy that space and that time. And I love my work because I work for myself. You know, I wanted to, I guess, sacrifice a bit of the time kind of early on. But what my hope is that that gives me more time with Ren in the long run, definitely. But I think you're totally, like, I'm glad you said that. It's okay to enjoy your work. It's okay for you to want that to continue to be a part of who you are, as well as being a mum as well. So yeah, although the other side of that, especially when you work for yourself, is doing work. And I remember, I don't know if you felt like this ever, but you know, please sleep, because I've really got that email to do. And then you end up with that guilt, don't you? So it's quite nice to be able to compartmentalize, like when you have childcare and when you don't. Do you agree?
Yeah. And I think I will, I mean, I'm going to do that better this time, just because it is my last lot of maternity leave. I think I did work too much. With Henry, definitely. So I've learned. I do remember, though, you reminded me of the feeling, because privately you can do the keeping in touch days. And I remember my first keeping in touch day when Henry was 2 months old. It was only for, I was there for 2 hours, but it was the most amazing feeling that I could go to the toilet and make a hot drink. And I could just sit down and type. I was in a clinic room, type on my laptop. And although I did miss my baby, those 2 hours were so amazing. And I wore a dress that you didn't have to breastfeed in because I got changed at my parents, and my parents had Henry for 2 hours. So yeah, for me, that was the mental break because Henry didn't sleep well. And I think we sleep trained at 9 months old. And from then things got better. But up until 9 months, like you said, I was massively sleep deprived. I remember going on like BBC Breakfast doing live TV when Henry was like about 3 months old, and I was so sleep deprived, but you're functioning on adrenaline and you do get through it. So I think hopefully it'll be easier the second time around, because you know what, you know that it's only a phase and that nothing lasts forever.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's such, yeah, phases. The good ones are phases, unfortunately, but the bad ones are phases, which is brilliant news. So good word there. Yeah, that's what got me through, still gets me through, actually. Even now, like, you know, this is a phase. This 5:30 a.m. is a phase. It will stop. We've been through here this before and we've got out the other side. So amazing. Thank you so much. I don't want to keep you any longer because I know you've got lots of bits and pieces to do, but thank you so much, Nicola, for sharing your story with us. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you, you know, like, I know it's not necessarily my place to say this, but thank you from all of the people that you've helped by sharing about your losses, your unfortunate losses, and your now being pregnant, as you say, with your rainbow baby. It's it gives a lot of people hope. I know that, which is amazing. And it helps break down the taboos and the silence for those people who can't necessarily speak out about it yet. So thank you so much.
Oh, no. Well, thank you for having me. And I should say that I'm also 35, so I'm not the youngest of mums. So, I hope that that gives people hope that, you know, I feel like that mid-30s, late-30s, early-40s are the new 20s. Just look after yourself, mental health, physically, control what you can, and then it'll work out.
Yeah, hopefully so. Wonderful. Thank you, Nicola, and I will speak to you soon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.